You're listening to U Talk, part of the Torn by Sports and Blog Talk Radio Networks. Providing unbiased opinions on all things Utah football and basketball.
Welcome to this edition of the U Talk podcast. I'm your host, Joseph Silverzweig. We are not, as always, today because Grant has decided he would rather spend time with his beautiful family than with me talking about Ute sports, which I think you'll agree means his priorities are out of whack, and it hurts my feelings. And Grant, I can't wait to see you again. We have a lot to talk about today because yesterday was National Signing Day, the second one, and Utah had a banner day, picked up a lot of really, really good recruits, some surprises, some exciting stories, lots of cool stuff to talk about. So we're definitely going to cover that. We've also got some other things that we're going to do, though. We're going to do the quick hitters, take a quick look at the Utes schedule, and then talk just a little bit about basketball. It was a nice night for the Utes last night as they were taking on the Trojans. And then we'll dive into recruiting and talk about that quite a bit. So with just me here, probably a little bit of a short show, but it's going to be a good one. And I think you guys are going to have a good time with me here. All right, let's talk about the schedule first. I'll tell you who I'm jealous of in the schedule. The American... something invitational is in Waikoloa, Hawaii, and men's golf is there golfing in Hawaii while I'm literally up to my eyeballs in snow. So I'm deeply jealous of them, and it makes me sad that I'm not there, but I wish them the best of luck. There's also some track and field meets tomorrow and the next day, the Husky Classic, the Don Kirby Collegiate Elite Invitational. There's a softball game against Western Michigan, and then the Lady Running Utes tomorrow at 7 p.m. in Salt Lake City are taking on USC. And again, they are having a fantastic season, absolute banner year for the Lady Running Utes. If you don't have any plans for your Friday evening, go on up to the Huntsman and take in the Lady Utes, take it on the Trojans. That should be a good one. The men's team took on the Trojans as well last night after all the signing day excitement was over, and did exceptionally well. They were able to knock off the Trojans on the road. At one point, they were up by 23. It was really kind of a romp. And then right at the end, it started to tighten up. Some of that home court advantage started to come into play for the Trojans. They tightened up to, I think, a 7 or a 9 point lead. And then Parker Van Dyke, everybody's favorite Parker, nailed a 3 with about 2.5 minutes left, and that really put it out of reach. And after that, it started to slow down. There were some fouls, and the Utes came away with a nice, comfy win. And then I saw something amazing on Twitter, which was that Larry Kay should be considered for Coach of the Year. This was some national media member, Pac-12 Coach of the Year for Larry Kay. And it's just amazing because we have set our expectations so differently. You remember the Utes were picked to finish, I want to say, 9th or 10th in the league by the Pac-12 media days. But of course, Ute fans were expecting a sort of a top four performance. So we've been pretty frustrated by the struggles that the running Utes have had. But people are impressed with what Coach K has done. And I would say a particular note in the last game with regard to Coach K is Jace Johnson. He had a great game, rebounded really well, and just was all over the place. And again, I mean, when we have this conversation over and over and over again, the way that Larry Kay develops bigs and the way that bigs get better from game to game over the course of the season is really pretty unique in college basketball. And I think we're starting to see Jace come into his own a little bit, particularly in terms of the physicality that he's going to need to be really, really successful as a 7-footer. Also, strange, USC didn't play any press. Utah was on a losing streak, mostly thanks to the full court press that the opposing teams were doing. Utah just didn't have an answer for it, and USC didn't do it. They just didn't want to press. And as a result, Utah went to a pretty easy victory. So we'll have to see what happens next time Utah plays a team that will press, because they still haven't figured it out. Those two losses were pretty ugly, and both thanks to effective use of the full court press against the Utes. So that's it for basketball. There's not a ton of games right now, But let's see what's coming up on that schedule. We have February 9th at UCLA. Hopefully we can sweep that LA trip. And then we are going to welcome Arizona and Arizona State. Those are going to be real difference makers in terms of the Utes' pole position for the playoff, that is the conference playoff, and for the conference pecking order. So hopefully Utah can come away with two wins there. And then they've got a long road series, three in a row, Washington, Washington State, and then at Colorado. And then they come home in the beginning of March for home tilts against USC and UCLA. That's, let's see, four, eight games left. Yeah. What do you guys want to see there? I'd be pretty darn happy if the Utes went 5-3 or 6-2 in that stretch. That would put them at about a 11-13 win conference season with between 4-8 losses. And I think that'd be pretty good. I think that's a lot to be proud of, a lot to go into the kind of go into the clubhouse feeling pretty good about where this team is, and then have the opportunity to play well in the tournament and hopefully an NIT berth. I think the only way the Utes are getting to the tournament is by winning the conference. They're not going to win the regular season. They have a outside shot at anything. Everybody has an outside shot of winning the conference tournament, but I wouldn't hold my breath for that either. I'm expecting the NIT for this Utes team. Well, that's kind of it for basketball. I want to dive right into signing day. It was a really good signing day. There were a lot of nerves over the last couple of months here between the first signing day and the last signing day. As we talked about in the last signing day, Utah has adopted a strategy of waiting till the second signing day and targeting uncommitted and loosely committed recruits from all over the country, and it's proven a very effective strategy over the last couple of years since we've gotten this new signing day model. But what it hasn't proven effective at doing is keeping fans happy, because the first signing day, which is what fans are grading off of kind of in their minds, has been lackluster in terms of major talent signing with the Utes, and fans get frustrated and they get worried and not necessarily want to wait until February to see the full structure of the team. But yet again, this has proven to be a really good strategy. And if you think about it, every team has a limited allotment of scholarships to give. They have, and beyond that, they have a limit in terms of what their scholarship interests are. So USC says, well, we want to sign two or three running backs this year. And if they sign two running backs in November or December, then they have to really love that third running back in order to be comfortable offering him a scholarship, because they've already met their allotment. They don't want to fill up their roster with scholarships they're not going to use. So by waiting, Utah creates some opportunity there and also creates the leaves themselves in a position to take advantage of sort of sudden or surprising changes. And a great example of that is perhaps their biggest signing of the of this signing day, which is who I'm going to start with, is Jordan Wilmore. He was a USC running back, committed to USC, didn't sign, and then decommitted. Utah was in the mix from the get-go with that. And then right here at the last week or so, Jordan suddenly started talking about ASU. He wasn't returning phone calls. He was getting difficult to talk to. The overall consensus was that Jordan Wilmore was headed to Arizona State. Which I don't need to tell you guys would mean joining Jaden Daniels, who Arizona State picked Utah's pocket to get at the end of the first signing period. But then, you know who I should say? Robert Blecken is the director of football personnel, so he's a staff position with the Utes. He's not a coach right now, but he's a staff position with the Utes, and he absolutely sealed the deal. He pulled out all the stops. He figured out exactly what Jordan needed to hear to kind of move him back off of the ASU commitment, silent commitment. And sure enough, Jordan put on a Utes hat and signed his NLI. And we have a 4-star running back in this year's class to go along with a lot of other talent. And of course, Utah has been pulling in transfers and kind of alternative recruits. That is not straight out of high school. Cam Rising, we've already talked about him. He did sign with the Utes. So Utah has a 4-star quarterback and a 4-star running back in this year's class. So it's really been an excellent year for elite, high-profile talent. So that was the big win was Jordan Wilmore. And I think that's a great example of why waiting can pay off, because as Wilmore's landscape, and Wilmore's a top 10 talent at his position in the whole country. He's an excellent, excellent football player. But as the situation changed, his relationship with USC soured. It took advantage of all the nastiness that's been going on over there, and it gave Utah an opportunity they were able to capitalize on. If Utah had already signed a couple of 3-star running backs, it would have been much harder for them to pull Wilmore in. So that's a good example of why this strategy works, even though it's frustrating as a fan to watch other teams sign 20 players or 25 players on the first signing day, and Utah signs 13 or 14. Let's see. The next one I think worth talking about is, let's go with, yes, Bamidele Oluseni is a UK native who went to play at Garden City Community College, which is in Kansas, as a JUCO situation, while he got himself football trained and academically ready and kind of transitioned from the different school systems and things like that. And he is just an absolute physical monster. I think we've talked about him before here on the show. But he is 6'7", 6'8", 330-plus pounds, not a heavy-set guy. It's all muscle. He's just a beast. He's an NFL prototypical offensive tackle. He is physically absolutely game-ready and is... It may honestly be similar to Garrett Bowles in terms of he's got 3 to play 2, but I could see him being a one-and-done player if he's as successful in his first year as he has the potential to be, and if the Utes are as successful as we expect them to be. But he's just a magnificent set of tools to work with, and of course he's going to come work with Jim Harding, who's one of the best offensive line coaches in college football, and I'm really, really excited to see what they can do together. There's a little rawness there. I think the comparison to Garrett Bowles is natural because they're both JUCO 4-star offensive tackles with a lot of NFL possibilities in their future. But Garrett was ready to go, 100% ready to go. You just had to put him on the field. And Bam is not there yet, but... has enough time and should be able to get there by the time the Utes get into the swing of conference play. So he's another one to be really excited about. I would say is the other headliner of the Utes early signing day. That's so we got the 4-star running back and then a 4-star left tackle is a both of whom are ready to contribute immediately. Cam Rising, we already talked about. That's a 4-star quarterback. He'd already committed, had already, I think, enrolled or financial aid agreement or something like that because he was a transfer, but is a huge, huge get for Utah. I've heard that they're working on making him eligible this year. I don't see that as happening, but he's just so important in terms of balancing out the Jack Tuttle loss, and it's great to have him finally sign. Then we've got Felix Fualalo, who had already signed a financial aid agreement, is in fact already enrolled, but he signed. He's an Australian rugby player, 6'7", 302, played at Mater Dei, played both ways, and is just a magnificent physical talent. I think you're probably looking at a defensive tackle role for him in the end. Then we've got McLeod. I believe it's Travis McLeod. McLeod is in the mold of Javelin Guidry. He is a defensive back. He's not a big guy, but he won the national 400 meters, finished second in the 100 and 200 meters in the national outdoor championships. So this is one of the fastest teenagers in the entire country, and plays really, really well in the defensive backfield, and is going to be a holy terror for teams to deal with in that role. And then, of course, has potential, particularly in the specialist avenue, because he's so fast. Kick and punt returner is certainly a possibility. Then we got Rawls. Rawls is was formerly committed to an FCS school and really did not get a lot of recruiting done. I don't know why. You watch his film and he absolutely pops off the screen as a legit three-star safety prospect. And Utah didn't have a lot of trouble flipping him because he was committed to an FCS school. But he's don't sell him short because of that. I think the tendency is to look at his offer sheet, which isn't impressive, and think that he's not that great of a player. But he is great. And should be really good and may even be able to contribute immediately. Then there is a transfer at safety. Nephi Sewell is transferring from Nevada. He'll redshirt next year, but be with 2 years of eligibility, should be a good contributor for the Utes. The other one that I want to talk about is Simote Pepa. He signed this morning. He's another great two-way player, and should, it's hard to say whether he'll play on the offensive or defensive line, but he will play. He's an athletic superstar and a really exciting talent. Then the last player we have to talk about, who hasn't committed anywhere yet, is Puka Nakua. We talked about him last week, and I said, look, don't expect this guy to come here. He's just one of these kids who's going to sign somewhere out of state. Maybe it'll be Washington. Maybe it'll be Oregon. Maybe it'll be USC. But he's not the kind of kid who wants to stay in state. And we talked about that. What's interesting, though, is he said, actually, I'm not signing anywhere today. I'm going to sit down with my family. I'm going to spend some more time with them, and I'm going to figure out what I want to do. And that is the first indication I've gotten in a month that Utah might actually be in this thing. And it may be that it came to it and he was ready to sign on the dotted line and realized, I don't want to leave these people behind. I want to be close to my family. So Utah has, again, for the first time in a month, a real shot, I think, at landing this player. And that's just one to watch. I certainly wouldn't get your hopes up. But is a good, I mean, he's a good, certainly a great football player, and it would be wonderful to have him here. Yeah, so overall, Utah's signing day, Utah's recruiting class was set up to be pretty disappointing. They were ranked in the low 70s, which is way lower than they want to be. Now, that wasn't, of course, a perfect ranking because it doesn't take into account return missionaries, transfers. Utah's got the linebacker transfer. Cam Rising isn't going to be on the recruiting ranking. So that's 2 4-star players who aren't on the list. But still, disappointing. I think that fans would be fair to be disappointed in that result, particularly in the lack of offensive marquee kind of talent at the skill positions. And that problem solved. They went out and they got a 4-star running back. They went out and they got the best, most game-ready offensive tackle in the country. And they are ready to slot those players into the positions that they need to slot them into and compete immediately for a Pac-12 title, which, of course, was the objective with this recruiting class, was how do we fill the immediate holes? That's the most important thing, is we need to be ready to win the Pac-12 next year because this team is as good as they've ever been, and we don't want to lose because, we don't have a linebacker. Oh, we needed a tackle, and we didn't get one. The only position I would say they didn't fill with a elite game-ready talent is safety. But today on ESPN 700, Kyle Whittingham announced that he was moving. This was a little bit expected, but he was moving Julian Blackman from cornerback to safety. This is as good as adding another player, in my view, because There's a ton of talent behind Blackmon at cornerback. They're going to fill that spot with another all-conference level NFL caliber cornerback, and I think Blackmon's going to benefit from the shift. His weakness is always man. You know, when he's one-on-one with a really good wide receiver, he can struggle because he gets beat over the top. Free safeties don't get beat over the top. They live over the top, and they play the ball and not the man, and I think all of that plays to Julian's advantage. So I think this is going to be a good thing for him. I think it's going to be a good thing for the Utes. Yeah, overall, this is just a really, really exciting time to be a Ute fan. There are so many good players. There isn't a single dud on this whole signing list. It's a little bit of a smaller list, not as many players because of the transfers, because of the return missionaries, but all of them should be really good. But this is a loaded class. There's elite talent on there, it doesn't change at all, and in fact increases my expectation that Utah is going to be a championship caliber team in 2019. And now we wait for spring ball, and then the long, hot, boring summer, and then we get to watch what could be the greatest season in Utah football history, and I am just so excited for that. So with that, I will leave you with a Go Utes.